No, you see, guys, what we do is we set a stretch goal on our Patreon. If we get $10,000 a month on the Patreon, we are launching a satellite.
Okay. That's a good deal.
Yeah.
We just need a satellite to launch.
Oh, no. What we do is we launch a satellite, right? And its sole purpose is to transmit episodes of our podcast from space.
That would be big brain. You could just downlink our podcast.
Yeah. Oh, man.
Hello and welcome to today's episode of the Bronco Space Podcast. This is the student-led collegiate podcast that aims to serve as an introduction to the broad field of spacefaring technology in the new age. I am your host, David Beecher, and I am joined, as always, by the president of Bronco Space, Michael Pham.
Wait, are we really going to go through the introductions again?
Just...
Okay, it's fine. Hello?
Nice one, Michael.
One of the consultants of our STEM outreach program, Taran Nguyen.
Hello.
And one of the co-leads of our liquid rocket program, Benjamin Narita.
Hello there.
Today's episode is a very special topic. Star Wars, what it means to us, and how has it impacted the aerospace industry. Michael, what does Star Wars mean to you?
Oh, well, I don't know. It's interesting. I don't remember what my first exposure to Star Wars was. I feel like it was actually probably the Clone Wars animated series. I think I actually saw that before I saw anything else, because when I was growing up, it was still playing on the television. Actually, when I say it that way, I sound really old. But
he was still watching it on the telly.
Oh, okay. You're patronizing me, Ben. You're patronizing me. But yeah, I think it was definitely the Clone Wars animated series first. I remember I was watching it on the television, the telly. And then I eventually saw, you know, the movies. Of course, you know, recently, I've been trying to keep up with the sequel trilogy as well. Actually, my freshman year high school English teacher had an absolute obsession over Star Wars. So much so that he had us watch it in class as a, you know, there are two kinds of teachers who show a movie in class, right? There's the kind of teacher that makes you take notes, and then there's the kind of teacher who pauses it every, like, 30 seconds to provide commentary. And unfortunately, Mr. Kick was the latter. And it was not a very enjoyable way of seeing the movie, but he... you know, showed it as a way of, you know, showing how, you know, the hero's journey goes.
And was it your first time watching the movie?
I don't think so. I mean, I think I had watched it earlier, but, you know, as a kid, I never really absorbed it, you know? Yeah. What about you guys? Ben, I know you're really into Star Wars.
Well, like, Star Wars has always been part of my life, as far as I can remember. Like, I think the first time I saw Star Wars, I was probably, like, 4. Because, you know, my dad was into Star Wars. He was 8 when it first came out. He had, like, the soundtrack for the movie on the record and everything like that. He had posters. Like, he was super into Star Wars as a kid. And that kind of just passed down to me. So, like, you know, when I was, like, 4, watched all 5 movies at the time. Because Revenge of the Sith had not come out yet. And, like, I just loved it.
I just remembered, I must have been, like, 6, 7, maybe 8 years old when I got my first, like, real Lego set. Like I had, like, just the Legos, which were, you know, before that, Legos were just a bunch of miscellaneous Legos. But, like, my first real set was not the AT-AT, because they didn't have the AT-AT at the time as a Lego set. What is it? The like AT-TE or whatever?
Yes.
The little walker from
the little one or the...
Well, no, big one. The one that's in episode 3, right? Revenge of the Sith. That walker. The one that
which,
you see all the time
one?
In It's the one with four legs. Was it four or six legs?
Four legs.
The one in the clones. The one that the clones drive around.
Six legs. There are two walkers in Revenge of the Sith with six legs.
Oh.
There's the ATTE and the ATOT.
I think it's the ATTE, and we have already lost like half of our viewer base by going this deep right away.
Yes.
Teron, what was your experience with Star Wars?
My very first experience with Star Wars, it was Episode 4, New Hope. I remember watching it with my dad. I was probably five or six. And then from what my parents told me, I had nightmares about Darth Vader after. But that was my very first experience. But later, Darth Vader became one of my favorite characters, ironically. But I watched all the original series on VHS with my dad. Ben's dad, my dad was a big Star Wars fan. He's also a big sci-fi nerd. This is why I got into STEM in general.
Yeah.
But yeah, I remember watching Star Wars thinking it was cool because, like, you see this guy and he has his light sword, and, like, 6-year-old me thought that was super
laser
cool.
Laser sword.
Oh, yeah.
A 6-year-old me doesn't know what a laser is, right? He just, like, oh, there's a flashlight with a weapon. Right, so naturally, I started grabbing every flashlight I can and pretend I was a Jedi.
Oh yeah, of course.
I don't know about you guys, but when I was a kid, I had one of those, like, you know, like the lightsaber, but it's just like a telescoping piece of plastic.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, of course.
And you whip it, and then it shoots out.
Yeah, and then yeah, those you have like a lightsaber fight with your friends.
Mm-hmm. And then after 5 minutes, they break.
No. You buy the ones that never break, no matter how hard you hit them on your friend's lightsaber.
No, you see, I never wanted to break mine, and so me and my friends, I was lucky enough when I was a kid to live on a little cul-de-sac with a bunch of other kids my age. So what we did is we took and don't tell anyone that this is in fact what happened. Well, I'm guessing telling the internet.
You're telling everyone.
But what we did is we took baseball bats and pretended they were lightsabers and had lightsaber paddles.
Baseball bats.
What about you, Dave? You know, when were you first exposed to the Star Wars?
So, this is not going to sit well with a lot of our diehard fans, but my very first exposure to Star Wars, and still my favorite experience, would probably be going to see The Phantom Menace when it first came out in theaters back in 1999.
Can we get a collective gasp?
At the time, I was 5 years old, and that was my first theatrical experience and my first exposure to Star Wars, naturally. So it left a big imprint. It was at a theater in my hometown, the Mann Theater, that no longer exists. So it's just got that extra lens flare of nostalgia on it, too. Mm-hmm. Because it's not an experience I can recreate, really.
Gonna be honest, at 5 years old, I also really liked The Phantom Menace.
How did 5-year-old you feel about the Duel of the Fates right at the end?
Oh, Duel man, that Fates? Was like the coolest lightsaber fight of all time.
Yeah, that was amazing, because, like, in the original series, right, the Jedi is an old man, and then Darth Vader is half robot, so you can't really move around. Even George Lucas talks about this, like, it's really funny to watch these guys in these suits trying to fight. But when they made the pre-sequels, they're like, all right, let's show the Jedi at their power, you know, with some energy. And then you just see these people doing all these tricks and flips and stuff, and you're like, wow, that's amazing. And when you're a little kid, you don't know what's a good or bad movie. You just think that's cool, and I want to replicate that as soon as I get home. And I'm going to hurt myself, probably.
The ending of that movie makes up for all of the council meetings and diplomacy that was the rest of the movie.
Yeah. As a 5-year-old kid, I really didn't care much for the political components of it. I didn't really care who Queen Amidala was, actually or otherwise, whether or not it was a ploy. And the negotiation scenes with the Gungans, I cared very little for, even though I did like Jar Jar as a 5-year-old, because Jar Jar appeals to 5-year-olds.
Yeah.
But, the lightsaber fight at the very end was definitely the core of the movie for me. And as a 5-year-old, never having seen Star Wars before, I gotta say, the dual lightsaber was lost on me at that age. I know it was a big revelation. This has never been a thing before. Sort of like Yoda pulling out his lightsaber in Attack of the Clones was a big thing. This has never happened before. But, I thought that was just a... It was just another lightsaber fight, and I was already sort of overloaded as a 5-year-old kid watching this movie for the first time.
Yeah, when Darth Maul pulls out that lightsaber.
Yeah, I think it pulled in a lot of little kids, too, because Anakin Skywalker was like our age when we watched it, and we're like, oh, there's someone that's like looks like us, or not looks like us, but the same height and age as us, and like he's flying a ship and blowing up the enemy. It's cool.
Yeah,
it is really a kid's movie.
So how do you guys feel like has Star Wars like influenced your decision to go into STEM at all, or?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I wouldn't say Star Wars has really been influential in my decision to go into STEM. I mean, Star Wars has always appealed to me more in a literary sense than in any sort of technological sense. Like, I've never harbored the illusion of recreating any of the Star Wars technology.
Yeah, I think it's interesting because I think, like, from a technological standpoint, I think Star Trek kind of has a beat. I mean, Star Wars is like a space opera, right? And so it's, you know, it's a Western, right? It's a Western in space. And I don't know. I think it's interesting because I think even though, like, you know, we look at it more as like just a literary work than like, you know, some, you know, technological, you know, feat of sci-fi or anything. I think that it still has an element, right, of being inspirational. You see, I know for me, right, like as a kid, you know, having a little X-wing and like, you know, flying it around and stuff like that, like that kind of stuff. I think that, I don't know, I can't say for sure if it really influenced me that much to become an aerospace engineer, but I feel like it played a role, right? And I know, I don't know about you, Ben, but I know when I was a kid, I had those like books, those like reference books that had like cutaways of all of the ships and stuff, right? Yeah. And I always thought it was so freaking cool, right? Like looking at the cutaway and seeing all the designs. Yeah. And I think it fuels
all the components and stuff.
Yeah. It fuels the imagination more than anything.
Yeah, it does.
Yeah. I don't know if you guys remember those Scholastic book fairs they used to get at elementary school, but actually at one of those book fairs, I picked up which are essentially the blueprints for Star Wars stuff. So I, in my room, sitting it somewhere in my closet, there is the blueprints to the Death Star, lightsabers, and blasters.
Ooh. That's so cool.
So, and just like seeing like the engineering part of it was pretty amazing. But for me as a CS major, seeing the droids and the robots, I always thought that was one of the coolest things ever. Because the droids in the show, or in the show, well, in the show and in the movies, are treated just as like characters. Like they're just, in some cases, they're pretty much equal. Like Anakin Skywalker, his love for R2-D2, in one of the Star Wars of Clone Wars episode, he almost blew an entire mission just to save his robot.
In much the same way that people care about a Roomba right now. There are actually repair systems that will, like, what Roomba does as a courtesy right now is they will send you not a replacement Roomba, but they will repair your original Roomba and send it back to you because people get so attached to them.
Really?
Wow.
Yes. I think even Roombas, like, if they run into something, they'll send you, like, a text message, like, I'm on the edge of a cliff or something like that, from what I heard.
Oh, man.
Help me out.
It's, like, a little melodramatic, but I think it adds a hint of personality to them.
It's very endearing.
I mean, all I can think about when you're telling me that is Michael Reeves' Roomba.
Swears every time
have you guys seen
something?
That one?
Yes.
Screaming pain.
Robot.
Whenever it hits anything, really anthropomorphizes the whole thing.
That was the one with that was the thing where the Roomba bumps into anything and it starts screaming, right?
Yeah. He hooked up like a Bluetooth speaker to it or something.
And cussing. And it cusses a lot. Yes. Which was hilarious.
Well, it's wrong. We are a family friendly show.
Oh shit, we are.
Yeah, you shouldn't have.
Mentioned
Michael Reeves on a family friendly show.
Oh yeah, that's probably a real bad
decision.
Well,
it's not like we can't cut that whole part out.
Yeah, I remember one time I went back to go visit my engineering high school teacher, and I walk into the classroom. The first thing that's said is one kid in the back's like, "Yo, is that Michael Reeves?" And I was just like, oh, man.
Someone thought you were Michael. Oh,
yeah, someone thought I was Michael Reeves.
Oh, man.
Like, oh, come on. I'm not that short.
Oh. I've actually never seen Michael Reeves. Do you even look anything like him?
Fairly similar. He's a little lighter skinned, but it was also during winter, and I, yeah.
Michael Reeves is also significantly shorter than Ben.
Yeah, Michael Reeves is like a full 4 inches shorter than I am.
Yeah.
He's like Theron's height.
Whoa. Out of all the prequels, I feel like Revenge of the Sith is still my favorite. For one, the soundtrack is one of the best.
The soundtrack in Revenge of the Sith was really good. But it's also just, it's paced a lot better. And it definitely holds better for adult audiences rather than children.
The Mustafar duel is probably also one of the best in the franchise.
Yeah, it probably was. Because it's, yeah.
I mean, save the like break where they start spinning the lightsabers in place for like a full 3 seconds.
Yeah, but like as a kid, that's so cool. It's like, man, I wish I could spin a lightsaber like that, and then you go try it and you smack yourself in the face.
Yep.
I've done this.
And they're just jumping around. That, so. You try to jump around like them too, but you can't do it.
Yeah. I can actually spin a lightsaber pretty well now. I pride myself in that.
Do you think you'll enter the lightsaber fighting sport? I think it's in France.
No, I'm not good enough for that.
That has to tie with baton twirling as one of the most spectator hazardous sports I've ever heard of.
I have to say, for me, I think that the opening scene of Revenge of the Sith is one of the most iconic parts.
Oh man, the opening scene of Revenge of the Sith was incredible. Like, yeah. I saw that scene, I don't know, probably at least 20 times. Like, because I had the VHS tape. And I would just put the VHS tape in the TV and just rewind it and watch it over and over again.
Yeah, it was definitely a scale that I think Star Wars had never seen before.
Yeah. Like, that is the Clone Wars in full swing.
They were, the opening scene, that was the fight against Count Dooku and them crashing the ship into Coruscant or the Jedi planet, right?
Yeah. It opens with Obi-Wan and Anakin entering over a Venator Star Destroyer. And like flying alongside it, and then it's like it starts with them trying to get to the Invisible Hand.
And I love the fact that it slowly reveals like the scope of this battle, right?
Yeah,
like it eases you in and then drops it all on you. I think
you go over the bow of the Star Destroyer. You just see like hundreds of like or thousands of ships.
Yeah.
To mention they're attacking the capital of the Republic.
Yeah.
Which is really crazy. And then now we've seen Star Wars The Clone Wars.
That, how much should we allow to go into spoilers for The Clone
Wars? That's right. Spoilers ahead for Star Wars The Clone Wars. The
spoiler
final
territory.
Season.
We're probably going to go into spoiler territory for season 7. Oh, I'm sorry, Michael. You're going to have to deafen yourself every now and then. We'll tell you when we're about to say something.
I'm editing this podcast.
Oh, you're right.
Hold on.
Never mind. Let's talk about Clone Wars another time.
We'll talk about season 7
of the Clone Wars another time. We'll stick to season 6.
Before you start on that, I do have a qualm about Revenge of the Sith. There was, all throughout the prequel trilogy, you're already cognizant of the fact that Palpatine is the bad guy, right?
Yeah.
So...
Well, actually, yeah.
It's really kind of, I still remember when they walk into the chamber and see Palpatine sitting at the helm of the ship, and he spins around and there's Count Dooku, and like, he already looks so much like a bad guy, and it's just disappointing that they couldn't put two and two together and realize that Palpatine is the Sith Lord they've been looking for.
That's part of what makes Revenge of the Sith what it is, though. You're like there the whole time like, you know exactly what's going to happen, but like, there's nothing you can do about it because the characters on the screen can't hear you.
Mm-hmm. And the other thing is Palpatine, or Darth Sidious, is one of the strongest Force users in the dark side ever in the series, right?
Yeah.
And the whole concept is that he hid his dark side abilities from the Jedi using dark side powers, which was mind weird. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, sort of stepping forward in the chronology, I guess. I think Rogue One is technically in the next movie. Yeah, it is, right?
Yeah.
Or Solo. I think Solo is chronologically actually in the next movie. So I never actually saw Solo. Should I
Neither
see
have I.
Solo?
Oh, Solo's good. You should see Solo. I like Solo. It didn't do so well in the box office, but I think it was pretty good.
I hear it's like tonight. Ocean's 11, but Star Wars.
Yeah, it's a big, it's like a heist movie.
Okay. I like heist movies.
Yeah, it's pretty good. It gets very fanservice-y towards the end, but it is very good. I guess it moves a little too fast at times, but...
I was going to see Solo a couple of years ago, but I lost my chance at it, and now I just haven't really gone back and made the effort to watch it since.
Have any of you guys checked out Mandalorian?
Oh, yeah, of course.
I've been meaning to watch it. I know Ben here, you know, watched the episodes as soon as they came out.
Yeah, I was watching them like 9 a.m. the day before they were... Or not 9 a.m. 9 p.m. the day before they were supposed to release. Because, you know, yeah, they released on the East Coast, and then we just see them as if we were there.
Oh, pulling the old VPN trick.
Well,
if only we had a sponsor. Hint.
By the way, this episode of the Bronco Space Podcast is sponsored by.
We unfortunately have no sponsors, but a NordVPN.
Hey,
you do actually use NordVPN, don't you?
I do use NordVPN.
How is it?
Nord. I like it a lot. Sometimes it can be a bit iffy in terms of if you need something, like if you need your ping to be really low, it can be a bit iffy at times. But other than that, as a VPN goes, it's pretty good.
But Ben, what can NordVPN offer? What can NordVPN offer me?
NordVPN? Okay, so VPNs will like encrypt your data and send it in between different places so that you're a lot harder to like track on the internet. So,
it's very useful.
It ups your security to like 9,000.
Yeah, it's very useful, especially if you're in the Star Wars universe and you are a bounty hunter and you're trying to hide your location.
Exactly. If you're like trying to stay hidden from the bounty hunter guild because, you know, you stole some sort of high value target, then yeah, use NordVPN. Do your searches on the HoloNet. You don't have to worry about a thing.
Hold on. On the topic of that, can I address something? This is going over to the Rogue One now, right?
Mm-hmm.
But, like, one of the things that I think is the biggest cognitive dissonance in the entire Star Wars universe is how much technology do they actually have, right? Because it's like, you know, spoilers. I'm sorry, this whole episode is big spoilers.
If you haven't seen Star Wars, turn around. It's too late anyways.
Yeah. I mean, we are assuming, right, that, like, if you're still tuning in, right, 20 minutes into the episode, you're probably a fan of Star Wars.
Hopefully.
But, Rogue One, right? You know, they're on the desert planet. They're on, like, the Maldives planet, right? Scarif, right? They're on the freaking... I think it was literally filmed in the Maldives.
Probably.
Yeah, they're on the Maldives planet, which, you know... Salt water and sand doesn't really seem like a great combination for what seem to be hard drives that they store all of their data on.
Yeah.
But anyway, looking past that, like, I wonder, right? Like, what exactly is the level of technology? Like, why don't they just take the Death Star plans and, like, upload them to YouTube or something, you know? we'll stick it in the Google Drive, right?
The Empire is actually very good about monitoring the HoloNet and censoring things.
Yeah,
but
to be fair, they are uploading stuff to space.
Yeah, they're uploading it on a big satellite dish to some ship that is not actually supposed to be there.
Mm-hmm. That's true.
Well, the critical battle at the end of Rogue One was that they were trying to upload these plans specifically, but the Empire was blocking their Wi-Fi.
Yeah. So they had to do a directness signal.
But like, why doesn't the Empire just keep their plans like? On the OneDrive, right? Like,
Because if it's on the OneDrive, then Big Hacker Man can get into it. Because, you see, the Empire doesn't use NordVPN.
So you're saying that Benedicto del Toro is just going to swoop in there, and then...
Yeah, he's just going to do the big hack and swipe the plans and sell them.
The main issue is, right, even now, sending stuff between planets and sending stuff through space is very difficult. So, assuming that they use the similar plans to what some ComSci scientists have done, is basically you have these sections of the internet, right? And then you'll have these packages sent of like petabytes and petabytes of data for you to update your internet in your region, right? So, while they are connected, they're very reminiscent of what is back in the day was called the sneaker net, is where you walk around with floppy disks and put it into people's drives, right? So you do have a quote-unquote network, but it is very slow.
Mm-hmm. So, like the data, right, is technically all in the internet or HoloNet, but it still has to be physically moved, right? Because it's just so hard to move that much.
The thing is, physically moving the data might actually be a lot faster if they can travel faster than the speed of light.
Yeah, that's true. Like, taking into account how when they were taking pictures of the black hole, right? They didn't send the data via OneDrive. They mailed in the hard drives to the scientists so they can stitch the pictures together.
Yeah. I guess, yeah, that does make sense, actually, now that you put it that way. Yeah.
Yeah, but Speaking Star Wars that, is also not really a science fantasy or a science fiction movie. It's more of a science fantasy movie. So it is just hand-wavy space magic.
And the science of Star Wars falls apart the moment Han Solo opens his mouth and says that the ship made the Kessel Run in 12 parsecs.
Hey, he did make it in 12 parsecs. He took a shortcut.
Mm-hmm.
Well, before we get there, I gotta say,
distance.
We need to talk about our other sponsor, Backblaze.
Oh my lord.
Backblaze?
Yeah.
Actually, Backblaze, just like in Star Wars Rogue One, will mail you a copy of your hard drive backed up to you if you lose it.
Oh, I
Man,
see.
Yeah. You guys need to hook us up with some some sponsorships.
Yeah.
We
any
love
of these companies
these
are listening, we will product place you all over the place.
Yeah, I personally use Dashlane all the time.
Yeah.
This is a service that clones the contents of your hard drive? Is that what I'm understanding here? And
so,
you pay them to do this?
Well, so what Backblaze does, right, it backs up your entire hard drive, and a few members of my family does this. They have a main rig where they upload about 4 terabytes, and it's uploaded, I think, every week or something like that, and it's about $50 a year, and it's peace of mind to have copies of your files in case in the event of a fire or someone breaks in your house and destroys all your computers, or if you have a massive computer failure and you want your data back. But the problem is you have 4 or 5 terabytes of data and you're not going to download that off the internet because that's just not possible. It'll take years at that point. So they just mail you a hard drive of all your data so you can just plug it back in and pull all your files.
Oh, I see. You manually upload files to a server. Well, I mean,
yeah.
I suppose as long as no one uploads like their individual Chrome files, that's fine, I think.
Yeah. You can back up whatever you want. It's just how much you're willing to pay. It's all encrypted, too.
It's pretty solid. Hook us up. Sponsorships?
Yeah, hook us
up. We'll sponsor your ramen.
My grandfather specifically destroys his hard drives so that no one can steal his credit information off of them.
I have a stack of my old hard drives just sitting in my room as like collector's items.
So hold on. Let's move on to episode 4, right? A New Hope. And let's ignore,
the
technological terror, right? We're gonna ignore the technological terror in the room for now. To specifically talk about the Kessel Run, right? So 12 parsecs, usually a lot of people argue that, that's just bunk, right? Like, parsecs are not a unit of time. They're a unit of distance.
Yeah, they're a unit of measure of distance.
Yeah.
You guys have to see Solo. That's all I'm going to say. You have to see Solo.
That's true.
He does the Kessel Run in 12 parsecs.
I haven't seen Solo.
You're not supposed to do a Kessel Run in 12 parsecs, but he does. Yeah.
The way you explain that, it's like they made the entire movie just to fix that loophole.
I mean, they didn't, but it is definitely fixed with that movie.
I mean, I guess it's just a weird way of saying things, right? Like, I wouldn't say, oh yeah, I got to LA in 200 miles.
Because the thing about Star Wars is, the hyperdrives are in set classes, right? So, if you've got a class 0.5 hyperdrive, you're going to be able to do the same distance in the same amount of time anyways because of the way the hyperlanes work. But what you can do is if you take a different alternative route, you can cut down your distance to decrease your time. Hyperspace is whack, and it's just a plot device in Star Wars, so, don't worry about the way hyperspace works. It'll break your brain. You're not supposed to be able to hyperspace skip your Millennium Falcon, and TIE fighters should not be able to jump to hyperspeed to chase your Millennium Falcon in the first place.
So we can sum it up as movie magic.
I mean, given that you can't go faster than the speed of light to begin with.
Well, you're technically not. You're technically entering a different dimension that interacts with the real dimension every now and then with certain anomalies.
See, this is why George Lucas said, in a galaxy far, far away, so just don't question it. Just accept the movie magic.
Yeah, just it's movie magic. The hyperspace RAM broke hyperspace. Hyperspace was broken to begin with. I don't know what you're complaining about.
And the fact that everyone in the galaxy is in the same time.
Oh. Wait, I wonder, right? Like, does the Star Wars universe have to have, like... Like, how do they do time zones over there? Like, is that even a thing?
That's not a consideration.
Is it just nonsensical on a scale that large? Is there like a universal coordinated time, just like we have here on Earth?
It'd be really depressing if General Organa went out to like a council meeting and sort of like Interstellar, he came back and his daughter was all old.
That would be depressing. It's very much an Interstellar move. As for Star Wars, though, but keeping to like the theatrics, George Lucas's main theme in every single Star Wars film is hope. Even when he created Mandalorian, he told the writers, "Give hope, something for the kids." And I think that's what makes Star Wars great. Because even in your darkest times, where there's a Nazi dictator controlling the galaxy that shoots lightning out of his hands, there's still hope, and you can fight back.
Yeah.
And I guess the other key feature in Star Wars is everything about balance, the light and dark. If the light gets too powerful, the dark will rise up, and that's what happened in Episode 3.
But the thing Republic about Star Wars is, it's not star peace. The galaxy is not balanced.
That's true. That is true. It's Star
like,
Wars.
It's like the commentary that everything always overcorrects in real life. Mm-hmm. Take like economics, for example, with the market. This is going to be really boring, but like we have a recession every 8 to 10 years just because of the way it's never perfectly balanced.
As all things should be.
Yeah, as all things should be.
Yeah.
Like, not to mention the amount of resources needed to make a Death Star. You would need the resources of several
you're right
planets,
for me to
not
throw
just
out
one.
A super like Star Wars nerd thing.
Sure.
That's a lot of dunium.
Okay. Hold on. Here's one of the things that like I never understood about the sequel trilogy, right? Which is, so you have the original trilogy. You have the first Death Star. That's pretty big, right? Then you have the second Death Star, and that's really big, right?
Yeah, it's like...
And then I specifically remember this scene in Episode 7, right? The Force Awakens, where they show like this comparison, you know? And it's like, oh, the first Death Star was pretty big. The second Death Star was really big. And then this Planet Killer Base is really big.
Yeah, Star Killer Base, man.
Yeah, yeah.
It's very reminiscent of like animes or Naruto, where like, all right, okay, we need someone more powerful, and then he has like never ending loop of power growing and growing and growing until it gets like crazier and crazier.
The stakes get turned up to like 9,000. Just
they have made a gun the size of a planet,
and then they took that gun, made it smaller, and put in every single Star Destroyer.
they did.
They finally miniaturized their technology.
But you see, the thing about that Star Destroyer is it's actually just an Imperial 1-class Star Destroyer scaled by 1.5. In every dimension. Including the windows.
VFX artist just, you know, hit the zoom, right? Like, just zoomed everything up.
He just did the Control A and then scale and typed in 1.5. It's like, that's good enough. Oh, and slapped a gun on the bottom because you can't not do that to have the big planet killing weapon.
So every single one of those Star Destroyers on Exegol was outfitted with a weapon from Star Killer Base.
Miniature Death Star technology. Yeah.
Yep.
You point the gun at the planet, you hold the button, and the planet goes boom.
And it's really hard to believe that no one knows how to get to Exegol.
Especially since everyone got to Exegol.
One of my favorite memes I've seen, I think it was on Sequel Memes on the Reddit. Mm-hmm. You know the scene where, spoilers, right? Darth Vader or Anakin is dying on the second Death Star. And then he's talking with Luke. And then it's like, oh, Luke, before I go to this place called Exegol. He dies, right? And then you just get the title, and then there is no sequel trilogy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Man. Well, there could be a sequel trilogy just without Palps.
Do you think they have iPhones in this universe?
In the Star Wars universe, they absolutely have phones.
They have data pads.
You got data pads.
Oh, yeah. That's true. Okay, because I was just gonna say
transmissions with in the Star Wars universe just sound so strange because everything already moves faster than light. So what would even be the point of having a light-like communication?
Yeah,
I don't know. Movie magic, like even in Star Wars, like all the technology in Star Wars, right? Why can't I just have a normal colored hologram? Why are they all blue? Like,
I mean, why not green? A pretty colorful hologram in The Force Awakens, right?
Well, that's true. But was that ever like an official hologram, or was that like him talking through the Force?
I think that's a hologram because it fizzes out when Starkiller is falling apart. And he's talking to Hux.
And then speaking of like starships, in Star Wars The Last Jedi, mm-hmm. in the ending battle, now Michael was there with me when I watched this, and I actually fell asleep during the movie because I thought it was really boring. But the fact that they just turn the ship around and turn on the engines and like, bam, everything's fixed. How did you guys feel about that?
What do you mean?
Do you remember in the ending with Luke Skywalker? And then I forgot her name, but she's basically told everyone to leave the ship, and she turns the ship around and she turns on the hyperdrive and it crashes into another ship.
Yeah, he's talking about the hyperspace ram.
Wait, what?
Yeah, the hyperspace.
No, you've got your order of events all wrong. That's the end of Act Two.
Oh, end of Act Two?
Yeah.
Okay. That just goes to show like how much I pay attention.
Wait, the end of Act Two?
Yeah.
That has to be the end of Act Three at least. I don't know.
No,
I remember.
End of Act 3 is the end of the movie. I'm pretty sure. Because Act 1 is.
Four-act structure, right? Or was it a three-act structure?
I think it was three. Because Act 1 is the like the opening scene in above. What was the planet? The one where Resistance Base was.
Whatever that planet was.
I can't believe
Star Wars ever departed from a three-act structure?
Is it? It might be a four-act structure. But then there's like the. And then they, you know, jump to hyperspace. And then, you know, Supremacy and company jumps in after them. They're like, oh my gosh, they tracked us through hyperspace. And then that chase is Act 2. And then Act 3 is on Crate.
I guess it was because the C plot, the C for casino, right? Cash my drift. I guess because the C plot took up so much of the movie. I thought there was going to be an act split in the middle there, you know, but I guess not. Mm.
The casino was kind of long. I mean, the reasoning was because he wanted the movie to be balanced, which, seeing his directing style, makes sense. But it was a little too long. I think it kind of slowed the pacing of the movie.
Because I remember, right, like after they fled to the planet, and then. Once we were spinning up the extra battle, I literally, like, looked at the time because I was like, I cannot believe that they're spinning up another battle. Yeah,
like, I read an article beforehand. This is going to be the longest Star Wars movie ever made, and like, end of Act One. I'm like, wow, that was a pretty good Star Wars movie. What time is it? Oh my gosh! And then they jump to hyperspace. It's like, okay, they're safe. And Supremacy jumps in after them. I'm like, oh, I guess we're watching another movie. And then like that goes down. Like they're like escaping the MC-85. I forgot the name of it. And they're like escaping. It's like, okay, that's the end of the movie, right? Look at the time. It's like, okay, this is already been like the longest Star Wars movie. And then like the hyperspace ram happens, and then like there's the landing on Crate. I'm like, oh my gosh. You get out of the movie theater. It's like 3 a.m.
This is exactly why I fell asleep during that movie, because it was way too long, and it was not good. At least for me, I did not enjoy it.
I thought it was definitely one of the better Star Wars movies, but I really liked it. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I really enjoyed the Rey and Luke plot. The B plot.
Oh, the Rey and Luke
plot
was so good.
Like, yeah, that was good.
Like what they did with Luke, like I know a lot of people did not like how Luke was like an angry old hermit, but like I saw absolutely no way else for him to be in the movie. Like, and it just, it added so much to the theme.
When you guys were watching the movies and they did all the in the new movies and they did all the flashbacks, did part of you wish that you're like, I wish I was watching the flashback version of this movie rather than what we're watching now?
So there was something confirmed in the new canon about how during her Jedi training, Leia heard the voices of the Jedi Masters that came before her, including Yoda. And I just want to postulate the horrifying idea of hearing Yoda's voice in your head without knowing who Yoda is.
In your head, I am.
That voice coming to you in the middle of the night.
Speak to you, I must.
Many midichlorians you have.
Oh, gosh.
Especially if he's doing that cackling imp personality that he had in the original trilogy.
Yeah. Man, Yoda, when I was a kid, Yoda was the best thing. Like, okay, Jar Jar, when I eventually saw Phantom Menace, Jar Jar was great too, as a kid. I don't think Jar Jar's great anymore. I think Jar Jar's pretty awful now. But, like Yoda.
My first exposure to Yoda was the dignified Yoda from The Phantom Menace, so I still remember looking at the original trilogy and thinking, what happened to you?
Yoda's been stuck on this swamp planet with the Darkseid cave for 20 years.
Yep.
You and...
One of the memories I have of Yoda is him floating on his, like, floating chair thing that he had. Mm.
Oh, yeah, his floating chair thing?
Yeah, that was so cool.
That was so cool. I loved his floating chair.
Like, I wanted one after. I was like, I want to float around, you know?
I want a hoverboard.
Mm-hmm.
We actually went to go see Episode 8 on release night on my birthday a couple years ago. And that was a fantastic experience. Like, I still remember the entire theater, like, cheering. Like, it was like a deafening cheer when Ben Solo made the decision to turn away from the dark side of the Force and strike. Well, I guess he didn't turn away, but
Snoke.
He made the decision to strike down Snoke.
When he killed Snoke, the entire movie theater just exploded.
Yeah, that was like a really defining moment.
And that was a very twisty plot twist.
But I really enjoy like the really loud and cheering theatric experience. Like, I'm not really one for quiet, reserved partaking of a film.
Oh yeah, opening night Star Wars films are like the best experiences you'll ever get, probably.
Like, when things are normal again, we have to see a movie opening night at the TCL Chinese Theater on Hollywood. like my greatest movie going experience of all times is seeing Endgame, the very first showing of Endgame opening night. At the TCL Chinese Theater. That theater seats like 1,000 people. It's literally like 1,000 people. It was nuts.
I bet I can guess which scene elicited the most reaction.
No, like, they were screaming the entire time. I the first time I watched the Endgame, I actually got none of the dialogue because every single time anything happened, people were just like jumping up and down cheering. It was incredible.
This movie came out.
Really, it didn't get like more intense when Captain America picked up Mjolnir and started phase two of the fight.
Big spoilers. I guess it's been 2 years, but
it hasn't been 2 years.
It's been a full year, and that movie has been re-released in theaters 3 times now.
That's true. Okay, we're probably fine.
The second and third times with DLC.
You know, I actually went and saw the DLC.
I did too.
I did not. I actually only saw the movie the one time when it came out, I think.
And because I'm the type of person that loves watching the original film than watching director's cut and director's commentary.
Mm.
Like, I have rewatched Lord of the Rings and the different versions of it many times. It's ridiculous.
Anyways, where I was going with that was the entire theater, like, they were cheering pretty much throughout the entire movie, and then they fell deadly silent during the scene where I'm forgetting her name, the general with purple hair. Yes, Holdo. The scene where Holdo turns her ship into an RKKB.
Yeah, the Holdo maneuver scene. Like, the movie theater was so silent. Like, that gave me so many chills.
It was one of those deafening silences, you know?
Like, everyone just... There's like a collective gasp, and the entire theater went silent.
Like, I've never seen them do this in a Star Wars movie, and I've been wondering why they haven't for so long.
It was like something that they did in Legends. Like, there is at least one scene I can remember of, like, three Star Destroyers jumping out of hyperspace in the wrong spot and hitting an Executor. But they just pass it off as, oh, the Executor's shields were so strong that it, like, deflected them. I mean, the novelization for The Last Jedi is like, oh, yeah, the Raddus. Oh, that's the name of the ship, the Raddus. Wow. Okay, the Raddus' shields were so strong that it was actually able to get through the Supremacy who had its shields off.
Wait, you're saying that they turned a Star Destroyer into an RKKB?
In Legends? It was like an accidental.
Wait, incident. Dave, what is RKKB exactly?
Oh, a relativistic kinetic kill vehicle. It is a vehicle that's going at relativistic velocities that strikes something with its kinetic energy.
Mm. So not quite relativistic, but have you heard of the rods from God?
Big tungsten rod in space. You drop it on the planet and produce mass destruction.
Dave, have you heard of that one?
Oh.
It's the concept behind the super weapon. And what was it? Like Call of Duty Ghost or whatever? Or Advanced Warfare? One of those?
Yeah, it was in Call of Duty games.
Where they're like the big Doomsday weapon. But cool. Yeah, basically, right, same kind of concept. You have a really big heavy piece of rock. You just drop it on a planet and it does massive damage.
That's a lot of damage.
Yeah, I think it was like the equivalent of dropping a penny off of one of those drop towers at the amusement parks. Because the right height, a penny can kill you.
But on that topic, so we did mention right in the intro that we were going to talk about the impact of Star Wars on the aerospace industry. And so I don't know. See, there's no definitive proof that there's like a direct connection, but I feel like it was influenced. Like Star Wars coming out in 1977, it's probably one of the most influential movies to have come out during that time. And so when you get to the 80s, you have what's known as the Strategic Defense Initiative, right? Did Reagan ever actually call it Star Wars, or was it just the media to call it Star Wars?
I think so. I think he called it Star Wars.
Basically, the Strategic Defense Initiative was this crazy plan by the DOD, and they called it Star Wars, or it was called Star Wars, colloquially at least. And the whole idea behind it was that you were going to put a bunch of satellites in space, right, to shoot down intercontinental ballistic missiles, which is just totally nuts. Like they had this one plan to put a nuclear reactor powered X-ray laser, like in orbit, that could just obliterate ICBMs in flight. They would have kinetic kill vehicles on the ground. Just totally crazy.
Yeah.
Just trying to imagine the logistics for that alone.
Because logistics are insane, but it's so cool to think of it.
I mean, that's why it never got built, right? Because the technologies that would have to go into that, you know, putting aside international politics, just the technology to go into that, like, would have been probably one of the most monumental things ever constructed, right?
And the propensity for self-harm on our own side, too.
I'm just trying to imagine the mathematics needed to calculate all that.
I mean, we are now in an age where there's going to be Star Wars forever, right? Because there's no way that Disney is ever going to stop making Star Wars.
Oh, no. In the words of one of my high school teachers, you had him too, Michael, he said that he doesn't care if Star Wars is going to be good or bad. He's going to keep watching Star Wars until the day he dies because he loves the movie so much.
Yeah.
It's Star Wars. He's like, I don't care if it's good or bad. I'm going to still watch it. It's Star Wars. And I think Disney's realizing they're going to make more money off of making these TV shows and their upcoming series.
Yeah, no, TV shows are way more popular.
And not to mention the upcoming TV shows coming up and the new series of The High Republic taking place 200 years before The Phantom Menace, which I'm very excited for. Because
I pre-ordered that book.
A quote from the creators, imagine the Knights of the Round Table, but in Star Wars. We're going to see the Jedi at their peak power. And not falling and then eventually collapsing into nothingness like we did in the previous movies.
Yeah.
And I know you know about this, Ben, but I'm a big fan of the Old Republic and that whole storyline.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
As well.
I feel like with the Old Republic, they the story is pretty good already. Like, mm-hmm. they could maybe just, like, fix it so it's a little more consistent with a new lore. But, like, more or less just re-release everything.
Yeah, and they can even keep it all in CGI, because those trailers are a movie of themselves. There's people who clips them all together, and they're just fantastic. Also, keeping with the theme of the Star Wars technology, if you... this is no longer canon anymore, but the Old Republic technology is... You can see the similarities, but you can see how much... Ironically, it's a little bit bulkier than some of the older stuff. So you can see how the technology like improves.
The droids are a lot boxier, and the... Were they still... They weren't using protosabers in the Old Republic, but like...
No, they weren't.
Like, but... Yeah.
They were a lot thicker.
Like the slim... They're not like the slim lightsabers that like Yoda would have or something.
Mm-hmm. They're very thick and heavy. And then as...
There's no Inquisitor lightsabers in the Old Republic. And there's no flying anywhere.
Yeah, there's no... I have a helicopter in my pocket now. Or my hip.
Yeah.
Which I'm still very confused how that works.
When the, when the Grand Inquisitor pulled out his lightsaber and it started spinning in his hand. Oh, man. I was like, this is like Maul 2.0.
Yes.
As someone who isn't terribly familiar with a lot of the extended canon, this is completely going over my head.
This is part of Star Wars Rebels. It's one of the TV shows.
Yeah.
So the Inquisitors were a branch in the Empire's military that would hunt down like old Jedi. It was just like to finish off the Purge. And the Grand Inquisitor, of course, was the top dog. Mm-hmm. Like answered directly to Darth Vader.
From my understanding, from parts of the EU, the Emperor took a bunch of younglings to train them to become what they are.
Yeah, that was... there's a Clone Wars arc on that, with Cad Bane hunting down like Force-sensitive children who would later become the Inquisitors. Although, the Grand Inquisitor was actually a Jedi Temple Guard.
Yeah. Oh, that's right. That is right. The Temple Guard is one of the lesser-known kind of Jedis, and they carry the yellow lightsabers.
Yeah.
They have the cool folding
double lightsabers, too.
Yeah, those are really cool. The other fun fact that not too people know about is Star Wars lightsaber colors do have meanings behind them. Like, they're not arbitrary.
There's also Mace Windu's lightsaber.
They wrote the lore in later.
That he's walking between the light and the dark.
Yeah.
But, like, of course, Samuel L. Jackson did just want a purple lightsaber. But
but the lore was written for it to justify it, which is a nice touch.
Yeah.
It was retconned.
If I were Samuel L. Jackson, I'd want a purple lightsaber, too.
What kind of lightsaber colors do you think you guys would have? Do you guys know the meanings of the colors?
No. I didn't know there were meanings.
Ben, do you want to go with it?
I think that green means something along the lines of more force-sensitive, and blue is like more martial-oriented.
We'll see, right?
Yeah,
and
green is
purple
like
purple means you're Samuel L. Jackson.
Like martial.
Yeah, traditionally all Jedi Knights have blue lightsabers, and Jedi Sentinels like have green sabers, which are more in tune with the Force like Yoda.
Mm-hmm.
Not to say that Yoda's bad lightsaber duelist by any means, but for example, one of
Yoda
the greatest lightsaber duelists
flies everywhere.
Yeah, he's lightsaber. I believe that is form. I think that's form 4 or 5. I can't remember which lightsaber form that is.
I think it's 5.
You know, the fact that is a widely recognized form of lightsaber combat is terrifying, because anybody other than Yoda pulling off those moves is horrifying.
Well,
to
Ahsoka
me.
Tano actually.
Ahsoka can pull off. Ahsoka's lightsaber combat is very similar to Yoda's, just with 2 blades rather than one.
Mm-hmm. It's a combination of two techniques. Yeah. And
is Ahsoka like a full-sized bipedal humanoid? Yes.
Well, except in the Clone Wars, she's 13 years old.
She's a kid at the beginning of the Clone Wars. But then towards the end, she's definitely like older.
Yes.
And of course in Rebels, she is definitely full-size.
I'm just trying to imagine the idea of somebody normal-sized fighting Darth Sidious with those same moves. And it's hysterical to me. So on the topic of different lightsaber colors, is there then plotline significance for Anakin originally having a green lightsaber and switching to blue?
Yeah, because Qui-Gon had a green lightsaber.
Yeah.
And Qui-Gon was going to be Anakin's master.
Oh. Oh, I see. Was that... Was Anakin just using Qui-Gon's original lightsaber?
I don't think so, but I think he was definitely more like under the influence of Qui-Gon rather than being his own person.
I see.
You can definitely switch your lightsaber colors. Like Ahsoka went from green to blue to white.
Well, she had with a hint of green. Yeah, she had green and then she had yellow and then she had blue and then white.
That's true. Wait, she had yellow?
Yeah, her shorter one was yellow.
Oh, that's right. That's right. I forget about that one. And there's also like hues of the colors too.
Yeah,
they do it.
It was definitely more greenish yellow than like Rey's yellow lightsaber.
Yeah. I think yellow sabers is one of my favorites, but one of my other favorites is the darksaber.
Oh, the darksaber is pretty cool. It's real
neat.
That
is really easy. And that is from...
And what is the darksaber?
So the first Mandalorian Jedi, when he crafted his lightsaber, it was black. Like, it was a black lightsaber with a white outline, and it had a narrow blade. And like it later became like a symbol of the Mandalore, who's like the leader of the Mandalorians.
The bounty hunters?
No, the people.
The people. They are
Mandalorians
bounty
weren't necessarily bounty hunters. They were they're like a culture, like a warrior culture.
Yeah. And they just happen to be really good bounty hunters. They're really good bounty hunters.
Yeah, they make good bounty hunters, so they tend to be bounty hunters. Like
and,
on the outside.
Correct me if I'm wrong, Ben, but the clones were modeled after Mandalorian.
Yes, their armor was modeled after Mandalorians. They were cloned from Jango Fett, who is a Well, Governor Almec says he's not a Mandalorian, but he's a Mandalorian.
Like, if you look in the later seasons of Star Wars The Clone Wars, their helmets, especially in the eye shape, you know, there's certain differences, but they're very similar to the Mandalorians in the show as well.
Wait, interesting. Hold on. Why do the Mandalorians have so much, like, impact on the Star Wars universe?
So they could keep selling Boba Fett toys?
Well, they were like, that's the important part. But, like, the Mandalorians, like, fought the Jedi a lot. So in the Old Republic era, so then they became like really, they were like a big warrior culture and they fought everyone. So they became like really important on the galactic stage. And then of course, like Jango Fett was a Mandalorian. And so the clones were cloned from him because his people had previously fought the Jedi. So they were like good Jedi killers or whatever. So that's why the Mandalorians were picked for the were picked for the clone template.
For the eventual order of Order 66. Mm-hmm. Keeping in with the rule of two.
Yeah.
I see. The rule of two, which it doesn't seem like anyone actually adhered to.
Well, actually they
adhered to it pretty well, but like the apprentice would always have an apprentice so that they could overthrow the master.
Yeah. I forgot which Sith Lord implemented that rule. I think it was
Darth Bane.
Yeah. Okay. But before that, the Sith were there was a lot of them. They had their own academy, just like the Jedi.
Yeah.
Well, even during like the events of the prequel trilogy, Palpatine was training Maul and Dooku simultaneously.
No,
Dooku was
not
a Jedi in the events of Episode One.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Really?
Dooku was Yoda's...
He's one of the best duelists of all time.
And he was Qui-Gon's master.
Mm-hmm. That's an incredible heel turn.
He became very... he didn't like the Jedi after they sent Qui-Gon to die, basically.
Mm-hmm.
Oh. That's heartbreaking.
Mm-hmm. And eventually he got corrupted by Sidious. But, like, he joined Sidious to destroy the Jedi. Or not to destroy the Jedi, to reform the Jedi, which eventually became Destroy the Jedi. And then he turned chopped off Sith. And he got his head chopped off.
On the orders from his own master. See. Because Palpatine's ultimate goal always was to have Anakin as his apprentice.
Yeah.
Because he sensed how powerful he was.
I mean, Anakin was always meant to be the penultimate Sith. Like, Plagueis created him that way.
That's why he's just so powerful. But even in the Star Wars, the Clone Wars show, the father and the brother and sister, they talk about how Anakin's the chosen one and literally control Yeah, and literally controls the dark side and light side of the Force.
Yeah. There's a lot of mythos that goes into that. Also comes back in Rebels. Mm-hmm. That's how they say Ahsoka.
Who are the father, the brother, and the sister?
So they're like these Force beings who are like the gods of the Force. And there's an arc in the Clone Wars where Obi-Wan, Ahsoka, and Anakin are like flying through space and they run into Mortis, which is their planet. And then the father basically goes to Anakin, it's like, you're supposed to like take over my job to control the son and the daughter, where the daughter represents the light side and the son represents the dark side.
Look, I'm tired of my kids, you take them.
Yeah. Well, he was like dying.
Mm-hmm. And then in the show, Obi-Wan says, this place is the Force, use it.
Then, like, this is, like, how Ahsoka ties into all of this. But, like, the son corrupts Ahsoka. And then, like, she fights Anakin. And then, eventually, like, Obi-Wan comes in and tries to... There's, like, a whole lot of politics that go into this, I guess.
Yeah, and you see a little preview of Darth Vader, too.
Yeah, but, like, Obi-Wan comes in and, like, has this sword that's supposed to kill the sun to, like, end the dark side. And then, like, the son gets his hand on it and tries to stab the father, accidentally stabs his sister, and then he, like, completely loses it and, like, just runs away. And then the daughter's Force energy gets transferred over to Ahsoka. So then she becomes, like, the light side, kind of, in that scenario.
I see.
Man, we are going really, 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 really deep into spoiler territory.
Oh, we're going super deep into the lore. And also, that arc is what the sequels were originally going to be based off of.
That's very involved.
Back when George Lucas was writing them.
This is a very deep nerd Star Wars talks.
Well, I hate to, you know, rain on your parade, but the episode has dragged over an hour and 20 minutes already, and so we might want to start wrapping this up.
Yeah. We're going to have like 3 episodes worth of Star Wars content coming out, guys. Yeah.
This is going to be renamed the Star Wars podcast.
Yeah. You see, this is why I'm thinking that after season 1, we should just do things like this.
Well, we all agree that we love Star Wars. Should we assign, like, homework or something for something we talk about next time? It doesn't have to be Star Wars. It could be, like...
Star Trek.
Is the next time you have one of these episodes going to be Star Trek?
Yeah, how about, like,
I don't know if I could do this with Star Trek. I haven't seen them all.
I have watched way too many Star Trek.
Okay, Thrawn, you get to take over for Star Trek. We need to get Nate on here for Harry Potter.
Yeah, we could talk about Marvel.
Yeah, we can work our way through Marvel. Fantasy.
I could go on about comic books forever.
Ah, yes.
Should we say that the next time we do like a pop culture episode, it'll be Marvel? Oh, Marvel's so big. I think you have to break it up, you know? I mean, I guess Star Wars is really big, too. And we just...
Dude, these all mean, can be like...
Break this up.
Yeah, these all can be like 10 episode podcasts.
We could have a season for each of these.
How about we let the viewer decide, right? We'll put a survey out there and then we'll see what.
Yeah, all of our.
Just ask if they like
10,
this format.
All of, yeah.
Well,
all
no, no, you said we had 27 lessons, so.
That's good.
And I know it wasn't me.
Yeah, it wasn't me either.
I don't listen to the sound of my own voice.
Well, I hate the sound right of my now, own voice. I think the Phase 1 Marvel movies are on Amazon Prime, right?
They're all on Disney Plus, too.
And yeah, yes, Disney Plus, and of course.
But the Phase 1 ones weren't the good ones. I think it was like the Phase 2 and Phase 3 ones that
were
good,
right? Today's podcast has been brought to you by Amazon.com. We are being paid in exposure, and one of us is dead. Please send help.
Yeah. Well,
Bezos, please hire me.
You have to agree, I think, that Avengers was the first, like, you know...
Well, Avengers was good.
That was so cool.
But I think we've just been spoiled by how good, like, Endgame and Infinity War have been. But, like, when Avengers first came out, that was a triumph, right? Of filmmaking. Yeah. At the time, the most ambitious crossover event ever happened. Like it's ever happened.
Yeah, when that happened, I was so giddy. I was, like, smiling teeth to teeth.
Okay.
That's, like, when I was first getting into superheroes, too.
Why don't we say that's the homework?
I'm not doing homework for the podcast.
Yeah, no, screw that.
Well, okay.
Well, you can't say Marvel, because what part of Marvel? That's going to take forever.
No. So it's just the phase one up until Avengers. Right? Like, next time we come back and talk about pop culture, we'll talk about up until the first Avengers movie.
Okay, so that would have been the Iron Man, or the first two Iron Man movies, right?
It's like two Iron Mans in there.
And then Hulk, Thor, Captain America.
Yeah.
That's it, right?
So we're not going to talk about the one above all.
No, we're not. We'll get there eventually, though.
Endgame was, my Endgame experience was a little sour by the people who were getting beaten up for spoiling Endgame.
Oh my gosh. When we were first going to go see The Last Jedi, there's a dude in the back of a pickup truck just drove by. It's like, I think it was, what did he say? He said Rey joins Kylo Ren. And everyone's just like, you haven't seen the movie. You don't know what you're talking about.
I think you're sitting there and you're sweating bullets and you think it's going to happen.
Yeah. And then, of course, you know, he was probably in the theater afterwards like, oh my gosh, was I right?
All right. Okay. I think we should put a cap on it.
Okay.
On that note, we're going to end here. I'd like to thank you all for joining today's episode of the Bronco Space Podcast, the student-led collegiate podcast that aims to serve as an introduction to the broad field of spacefaring technology in the new space age. Ad Astra.